Good morning, everyone. It's a little unusual to start a talk with something that's parenthetical, because one usually thinks that comes in the middle of something, but there you have it. Not only do I have one that just occurred to me, but two, and they're non sequiturs, and then we have to pray that I find a segue back to my talk. So I need your help. I was just, when we were meditating, the thought came to me that I was in this room with all of my friends. The thought just came, and it was so calming and uplifting that we were friends and we were going to be together, and I just was reveling in that almost. And then, maybe I should be embarrassed to say, I didn't know what our spiritual quality of the week was, but it was about sharing. And of course, who do we love to share with but our friends? And then the choir comes up and sings Brothers. And I thought, boy, if we ever needed any proof that thoughts are really universally rooted, there it was. It just all came together so beautifully. The second parenthetical is that in this past week, Pete Seeger died. I look around the room, there are at least some of you who know who Pete Seeger is, and I'll bet all of you have heard his music, whether you know it or not, because many songs that he wrote we attribute to other people, like If I Had a Hammer, which I always thought was a Peter, Paul, and Mary song, but it turns out it was a Pete Seeger song, and many other songs. I don't have to list them. He was quite the man, though. Not only an extraordinary musician, but he was, of course, a pacifist, and he was somebody who really wrote his music both in terms of being a pacifist and somebody speaking out in the form of music for civil rights, really risked his life. He was actually blacklisted during the McCarthy era. But one of the things that he said when I was reading this past week or listening about his death, is that he said, music is very sneaky. That's what he said. And he said, it's sneaky because it transcends the mind. I don't think he used the word transcend, but in essence, that's what he was saying, that it goes beyond logic and it will grab people. He was actually the man who popularized the song, We Shall Overcome. And in fact, the original words were, we will overcome. And somebody said to him, why did you change the word? And he said, because it just flows so much easier. It's easier to sing and it's easier to hear. And it was, in fact. So that's who he was. But he used that phrase, music is so sneaky. And this morning when I was in the room waiting to come out here, I was listening to the last chant that our musicians were leading. I am he, I am he. Blessed Spirit, I am he. What a beautiful affirmation. It's completely what the lesson is about today. I am he, I am he. Blessed Spirit, I am he. And then you put that affirmation to music, and it's just so wonderful. Hence Pete Seeger popped into my mind. But I had the thought back there that maybe I just shouldn't even give a sermon today. Maybe we should just chant that chant because it just says it and it sneaks in, like Pete Seeger said. As I was saying a couple of weeks ago, our musicians do such a beautiful job of choosing chants and the music that just fits right in with our teaching, and I'm always so both impressed and touched by it. Now the segue. There really isn't one. I'm just going to say this reading today is really quite beautiful, just so filled with love and hope, the way Swamiji writes about it. I won't be able to say the line exactly, but he says, And so are we also like them. And that line really popped out at me when I was reading this yesterday. What an amazing thing to say or to read when we are, in the previous page, talking about these, their avatars, those people who are born on earth solely for the spiritual upliftment of all of us. It's quite an amazing thing to then find a line in there that says, and so are we also like them. One wonders, what could that mean? And I was remembering how often I've stood up here or in classes and talked about what a blessing this path is for all of us. What an amazing blessing this particular path is for those of us who have found ourselves on it. And often I'm speaking of it when I say that, or in the past, I had been speaking of it in the sense that Paramahansa Yogananda, who was the last avatar in this line of great gurus behind me, lived until 1952. And as I've said in the past, we don't have to wonder a lot about him. He was born at a time where books were written, songs were written. Even still today, there are a couple of people alive who lived with him. But until less than a year ago, we had Swami Kriyananda here, who was a direct disciple who lived with him the last years of his life. We didn't have to wonder about whether the way we were hearing his teachings are true, the way people have questioned, is what is written in the Bible really what Jesus said, and it's hard to find those things in writing, or there are no pictures, there are no living witnesses in the body, as we think of witnesses in the material realm, the way we had them with Master, and then of course with Swamiji, who came to us and who wrote all of the books that he wrote and all of the songs that he wrote. And if the numbers themselves aren't enough to just boggle our mind, the message in every piece of it are these underlying truths. I read something recently where Swami said, I never wrote a book where I wasn't trying to share the basic truths that Master came to share with us and to help raise and expand people's consciousness. So here was somebody who could masterfully and through pure inspiration share everything Yogananda ever said. So in that sense, we've had it pretty easy. You know, Swamiji said, I'll bet you all think that you would have loved to have lived with Master, but it wasn't easy. He said, I explain everything for you. Master didn't explain anything. He wanted us to learn by intuition. He wanted us to attune ourselves to his vibration and learn in that way. And as we've heard, Swamiji said it one of the big talks he gave, there's probably not one of you here who could have made it with Master. It was challenging, but we've been blessed with all of these beautiful interpreters. But when I plugged into the reading for today, I realized the exceptional beauty of the other way that these masters, and I'm doing this because it is these masters on the altar behind me, that they were born for our spiritual upliftment, and they lived lives that looked so much like ours in many ways. They were householders. When Lahiri Mahashaya had his first experience of samadhi with Babaji up in the Himalayas, and he was begging him, please keep me up here. I just want to stay here. Like after having an experience of samadhi, who was going to want to go back home and go back to work? And he had a family and he had children. And Babaji said, no, your life is in the city so that you can show all of those people living there how householders can also become great yogis. And he sent him back. There's a wonderful story of Master himself after he had received also an experience of samadhi from Sri Yukteswar. And when he came back into his body and into his conscious mind, out of that superconscious mind, the first thing Sri Yukteswar said to him is, "Let's go sweep the balcony." You know, he had him cleaning the balcony to sort of settle him back here. We live here. We have to function here. They had jobs. They were accountants. They were parents. They had children. They went through everything we went through that we might, in our logical minds, think could keep us from superconsciousness, except they came to show us that we can have all of those issues. You remember, let me just think. I think it was Lahiri Mahashaya's wife who was always so worried. You take care of everybody else. It could have been Sri Yukteswar, but it hardly matters, does it? It was one of them. You would take care of everybody else, but you don't take care of your own family. You could be out there making money, but you're not. What's to become of us? What if something happens to you? How would we live? Does it sound familiar? You know, we can just translate it into our own issues that we have. And they came and they lived like that. What an extraordinary act of love, so that we could see that amidst what Master called all those crashing waves, that enlightenment is not only possible, but probable. It's one of the very beautiful things about the way Yogananda came to us. He came and he said to us, Jesus didn't come here thousands of years ago to show us how great he was. He came to show us how great we are. And then Swamiji says about Master, Master didn't come to show us how great he was. Swamiji writes in one of his books, I think Awakened to Superconsciousness, he said, you know, in all of the ways and times that God has appeared on earth, he doesn't come with a big sign in capital letters that says, God, right? They come in a human body, and they come to show us how great we are. It is one of the most beautiful things about Paramahansa Yogananda is that he held everyone at and in their highest potential. He really did come saying to us in so many ways, you too can be all that I am. And when we think of all of the things that Jesus said, even as I am, you are too and more. Seek ye therefore to be perfect, even as God in heaven is perfect. You know, what's so amazing about that is that in another way that our path is unique is that if we look back, and I don't want to spend too much time here because I'm just holding it up as a difference, not, I don't want to be criticizing any other path. But many of the Christian sects really teach there is only one begotten. They teach right out loud that no man should expect to be perfect. And here we are, part of a path that says, absolutely. In fact, you are perfect. All you need to do is awaken to it. Everything I am, you are too, and more. What else could Jesus have meant by that? He meant just awaken to your true nature. When I was thinking about this yesterday, I thought, look at what has happened to so many of the true saints in history. If they had experiences of samadhi, there was not necessarily a loving presence there who would say to them, come, let's go sweep the balcony. Let me help you move back through life. Or no, you will continue to have these experiences, but here's your role. Here's how you will serve others. Many of those people were excommunicated. Many of them were punished. It's really what happened. Padre Pio, Therese Neumann, who had received the stigmata, they were actually not allowed to be seen in public or to see the public. St. Joseph of Cupertino, who used to levitate, he was kept in basically what are cells. He was taken to churches that were so far away from everybody and everything. In those days, they were referred to as being put in prison. So it's not usual what happened when Yogananda came. It's not at all usual that a true avatar was born, as was Jesus, and that all of his disciples, master's disciples I'm talking about now, Swami Kriyananda in particular, who would carry on that teaching that would help us say, be ye therefore perfect. And it's not even that you can, but that you already are. It is the great legacy of Yogananda. It's the great thing that he left, that he came. Now, of course, he came in an energetic, in a period of time when it's all about energy. So he was born, or he came in this time, in very, very early Dwapar Yuga, very different time than when Christ was here, when we were still in a darker age. And look, even after Jesus was born, how much darkness there was to descend. But it's a great gift that we've been given. All of these early readings, you know, because we're at the beginning of the new year, all of these early readings are really about consciousness and what it means for us to know that what our goal here is in this life is to change our consciousness. Very much as Jyotish was saying last week, and I was even saying 2 weeks ago, consciousness is God. Consciousness in its vibrationless form is the divine. You put a little vibration into that, it comes to us as thought. More vibration, it's transformed into energy. Grosser vibration, it's transformed into the material world. Our job is to figure out how to reverse that, how to change our vibration until it is still. That's exactly what we're doing here. And when it's still, then we remember who we are. This is what happens with Kriya Yoga or any meditation, any true meditation. It gets us into our spiritual spine and it magnetizes that spine and it calms the mind and it calms the, it stills the heart. It calms the breath. These are what all of these techniques do, such that we are vibrating at a finer and finer and finer frequency until we are resting right here in our very center. Why did Yogananda say the spiritual path is about helping us remember that spirit is center everywhere, circumference nowhere? Because anything that rests at its center is much, much, much more stable. You can approach any problem, you can deal with any problem when you're sitting at your center. And how do most of us live most of the time? Circumference everywhere, center nowhere. It's much harder to be out there. We lose our balance easier, we lose our focus, we lose our ability to cope and to deal. We begin to feel out there alone rather than in here with God, center everywhere, circumference nowhere. It is the place from which all of our strength comes. And it's a delusion. It's Maya when we get out there and think that we have that strength independent of what is right at our core. These are the tools. These are the keys to the kingdom that Jesus spoke of. They're all of our meditation techniques. In the end, what we need to remember from Yogananda's life, from Jesus' life, from all of these great masters, are the things that we've heard over and over. First of all, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all else will be added unto you. It is what Master said to us over and over. Keep coming back. Keep coming back to God. Keep doing what you can do to find yourself in the center of everything. We need to affirm over and over, I am He. I am He. Blessed Spirit, I am He. No matter what's come before us, that we know that that is in fact our birthright. It's how we came in, not in this world of what Master refers to in the autobiography, vibrational phenomenon. That's how he talks about everything that we see in front of us. All of that superconscious energy just put into vibration. Master himself says, everything is God, but often it's here God, dreaming, sleeping in delusion, but always trying to seek itself. There's that beautiful line of St. Paul's where he says, I die daily. But before that phrase comes a sentence of his that says, basically, as I've embraced Christ and I have gotten to be at one with God, with Christ himself, when I'm trying to think of his exact quote, and it's not going to come to me right now. But when he says, I die daily, what he means is, I leave that experience of being dead in this material world, dead from the delusion of the material world. I leave it and I enter into Christ consciousness, my true self, not Jesus Christ the man, but the consciousness with which Jesus came, Jesus the Christ. It is the Christ that we're talking about today. It is that consciousness that we know we can all be a part of. Swami makes such beautiful arguments, if you will, in so many places in his writing about the impossibility of there having been only one begotten Son of God. He says, can you imagine even all of the churches around this world, even this little world as we know it? And then the beautiful statement, wherever two or more gather in my name, there I am with them. And he said, just think of the possibility of it. So it's the consciousness with which he lived that we are working to remember, to attune ourselves with, to become perfect in that oneness. Now I'm going to do the opposite of what we usually do, and I'm going to end with a joke because it's perfect. So there's a Buddhist, and he walks up to a hot dog stand, and everybody's in line ordering their hot dogs with whatever they want. And the Buddhist walks up, and he says, make me one with everything.